Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the war on gold when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Well, Swinton was the guest of honor one time at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft back in 1880, and someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Swinton totally outraged all of his colleagues when he replied that there's no such thing at this date of world history in America as an independent press. You know it and I know it. There's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things. And any one of you who would be so foolish as to write his honest opinions would be out on the street looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country, and to sell his race for his daily bread. Now you know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, our lives are all the property of other men. We're nothing but intellectual prostitutes. Well, boys and girls, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program in this New World Order. They're the men and families like the Windsors and the Rockefellers, the Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time for us to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and to stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let you and I prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order my free 4-hour compact disc package? Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and then send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, the book called War on Gold, The War on Gold, written by Anthony Seton back in 1976. Seems like a crazy thing today in 2006, 30 years later, to be reviewing. I'm reviewing it because Anthony Seton was a prophet. Well, he was a prophet in his own time. He was a prophet because he accurately foretold the inevitable results that were going to result from a deliberate policy of aiding our enemies between 1917 and 1975. He said, look, if you build these enemies up, you're going to have more terrorists, not fewer. You're going to have more wars, not less. And we've had more wars and more terrorism since we began this process back in World War I of building up our enemies. Now, it makes all the sense in the world. I mean, if you want to have an economy based upon sickness and disease, the course of action that we have embarked upon, called allopathic medicine, back in 1900 to today, has worked wonderfully. If you want an economy based on a military-industrial complex, such as we have today, the system that we have built is perfect. This is utopia. We have accomplished our goal. If you want an economic system in which you have constant inflation and a deterioration of your savings and your store of wealth, you can't do better than a fiat paper currency, kids. And that's what we have, and that's the result that we have obtained for ourselves. Now, I, for one, do not believe that sickness and disease is good for us. I don't believe the military-industrial complex is very good for the basis of our economic system or a fiat paper currency. I'm not here to change any of the three. Don't think that I'm a revolutionary now, come in here, and I'm trying to overthrow the New World Order. I thought, though, that I might bring to your attention some of these problems and some of these processes and then ask the question, are you really sure that this is what you want to do? Because there is an inevitable conclusion that comes from this. The inevitable conclusion is the collapse of your society, like the Roman Empire, the Egyptian, Babylonian, Assyrian, and the Greek empires of the past. They all come on the world scene. They rise very high. They produce a great standard of living, a wonderful system for a few, for a period of time, and then they go into national captivity, which isn't very pleasant. And then there's a lot of death and destruction, a lot of waste, and then rebuilding comes out of that, and then a new empire, civilization, takes its place. We're in that process right now. The great American civilization is in the process of decline, and ultimately that decline leads to national captivity. That's a foreign army comes in and takes over and then operates the thing for a while at your disadvantage. That's what's coming. Bible prophecy tells us that that's what's coming. And just reason, logic, and common sense and a historical perspective tells us that that's what's coming. And Anthony Sutton, a historian, and Anthony Sutton, an economist, back in the 1970s, wrote this book called The War on Gold. And so the question arises, why don't we use gold coin in our everyday transactions? We used to. Civilizations and empires in the past did. They became great and powerful. Then they abandoned gold and went on to something else. They declined and went into oblivion, historical oblivion. It's been that way for thousands of years. There's never been a successful fiat currency in the history of the world, and we Americans are in the process of making ours the first. That's what we believe. Honest to God. The other day, Katie Couric was interviewing some people, and they all said the economy is wonderful, it's booming, and everything is great. Everything's terrific. We're going to vote the straight Republican ticket. Now, the third quarter of 2006, as I speak, the numbers just came out the other day, and the economy is growing at 1.6% in the third quarter. Well, that's 1.6% per annum in the third quarter. That's down from 3% in the first quarter or four. And I wanted to point this out to you because the inflation rate's running 10%. Now, you've got a war spending $2 billion a week. War is a stimulus for the economy. Wars are wonderful economic stimulants. That's why we have a war in Iraq. We needed an economic stimulus back in 2001 when we were going into recession. Remember, during the 2000 election, the stock market peaked in March of 2000, and we went into recession in 2001. President Bush, ever on the spot, to protect the American people, said, my God, we need a war. Let's go find somebody. And so they created this false flag event here called 9/11, and now we've gone to war. It's a wonderful stimulus. Now, Ben Bernanke, you know, Helicopter Ben, is putting 10%. He's increasing the money supply by 10% per annum. I think it's more like 12, but it's 10 anyway. So now we got $2 billion a week being spent on the war. We got 10% inflation being created, 10% more money supply being created, and the economy is growing at 1.6%. All right, now, let's subtract 1.6% from 10%, and doesn't that leave 8.4? All right. Now, here's where reality is, kids. Your economy is contracting at the rate of 8.4% a year. Now, that's called recession by any stretch of the imagination. But you're not feeling that yet, because it takes about 18 to 36 months for this inflationary program to take full effect. Meanwhile, back on the farm, we have the beneficial effect of the war and the beneficial effect of the money stimulus. I mean, you can borrow money for almost anything. Just go to the bank, tell them you want to borrow money. They'll loan you money to buy hula hoops, for crying out loud. They're trying to get more money into circulation. And everybody feels good, and everybody's working, and everybody's, you know, the unemployment rate, I think, is down around 4% or something like that. Everybody's happy. Everybody's tickled. Meanwhile, your manufacturing jobs. Now, remember, we talked about this last time. The manufacturing industry, the base of your economy now, has been eroded from 60% to 13%. And that's occurred over the last, I don't know, 20 years. It's really accelerating now. And now they're exporting your jobs. I mean, hell, they're taking, you know, you could be an accountant, you know, making pretty good bucks, and they've outsourced your job to India. Now, this has been going on now for the last 4 or 5 years. Last time I saw some numbers, we've now outsourced around 2.5 million jobs around the world, and we're going to export another 2 or 3 million jobs over the next 4 or 5 years. And this is wonderful. I don't see any problem with outsourcing jobs. It's a tremendous program. It's called free trade. We've been engaged in this free trade ideology now since the 1950s. It works wonderfully for General Motors and Ford and IBM and Microsoft and Walmart. Now, what I don't understand is, how does this play out, you know, on Main Street USA? How does this benefit you carpenters, plumbers, and electricians, and you manufacturing guys, you know, you in the steel industry? You know, now that they've closed down, I've forgotten now the number. I think it was 26. In Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in 1960, if I got my numbers, if I can remember, there's 26 steel mills in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. 26. I was in Pittsburgh a few years back, and there was 2. And then I heard Bethlehem went broke. They're out. Let me ask you this. Is there anybody out there in radio land in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that could you write me a letter? Send me an email, would you? And tell me, are there any steel mills still working, still operating in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? That used to be the steel capital of the world.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, made more steel in that city with those steel mills than any other city in the world. That was America. That was American. Today, I don't think there are any. If there are, there can't be over one or two steel mills left. What the hell did you do with the other 24? Oh, you sent those over to Japan, Taiwan, China? What'd you do that for? How does that benefit people here in America to export your steel manufacturing capability to some foreign country? I don't know. You know, the politicians come out here, Republicans and Democrats alike, and they preach about free trade, free trade, free trade, free trade. We need more free trade, free trade. I'm going, okay. Now that you've got free trade, how you like it? But hey, listen, the unemployment rate's only 4%, but you know those high-paying manufacturing jobs in America aren't here anymore. They're somewhere else. It's great for Bangladeshis and Indians and Chinese, and I don't begrudge them, but, you know, it doesn't do anything for us, and I say to hell with the Chinese, let them create their own steel industry. But then, you know, that's protectionism, and that's not kinder and gentler, and that's not, you know, the communist way. Well, a guy by the name of Anthony Seton writes a book over here back in 1976, and I thought I'd share that with you because he made some prognostications. And he said that, so as we continue to subsidize communist countries under the theory of detente, we shall see more terrorism. So I'm going to underline this word, more terrorism. This is 1976. Let me ask you this, kids. Do we see more terrorism today in 2006 than we did in 1976? I think so. He went on to say, more subversion, not less. Is there more subversion going on around the world today? Are governments being subverted? Is the United States of America working to subvert the government of Saddam Hussein, the government of the Taliban in Afghanistan, the government of Venezuela? Has the United States of America between 1976 and 2006 subverted any other governments in the world? My God, kids, we're over in the Middle East and Central Asia subverting every stand government over there. Why are we doing that? What's the purpose behind it? He goes on to say, more subversion, not less, more Portugals, more Allende's in Chile. And in the long run, we create our own problems. If we want to halt revolution, terrorism, and communist expansion, the key is in the hands of Western businessmen. And all they have to do is turn the key in the lock and shut off the technology, shut off the technical subsidy to our enemies. And in the final analysis, it's just that simple. But they will not do it. And why not? Well, you see, Western businessmen fall all over themselves to demonstrate that they're in business because they have a social conscience, which has priority over profits. And yet these same businessmen will not turn a hair at supplying the technology that kills their allies and workers by the million. Now, boys and girls, when you hear some corporate chief executive officer, you know, like Ken Lay at Enron, you know, say, oh my God, we got a social consciousness over here, and we just want to employ people, and we just want pensions, and, you know, what a crock of hogwash. And the major corporations over here are destroying all your pension plans. Before long, boys and girls, there'll be no pension system left in America. We're in the process of destroying all the pension programs. How does that benefit you guys out there in radio land? Tell me. Send me an email, would you? Explain that to me. How the destruction of the United Airlines pension program for the pilots and the stewardesses and stewards out there benefits those people. Now, of course, we've been sold on this idea of free trade, and I don't want to sit here and tell you people that you shouldn't have free trade. I don't know what's good for you. I'm just a reporter, and I'm reporting on facts, and it doesn't sound like it's done much for you over the past 50 years. What makes you think it's going to do anything constructive for you over the next 50? It's a wonderful program for United Airlines. It's a wonderful program for a corporation to stop paying its employees their pensions. That puts money in their pockets. No doubt about that. How does it benefit 50,000 employees, though? Somebody said the other day, well, it benefits the stockholders. Well, okay. It benefits the stockholders. But explain to me, please, how, when we export our industries overseas, jobs that pay $13, $16, or $22 an hour, and we export those overseas so that those corporations then can get the labor for $6, $8, or $10 an hour, how does that benefit American business when you go to sell your products to people that are now working for minimum wage? How many Cadillac automobiles do McDonald's French fry workers buy? I mean, you know, come on, kids. If you're going to be buying the Lexus automobiles and Cadillacs and so on, don't you have to have an economic base? Don't you have to have an income to support the payments? Are you going to support that on service industry jobs at minimum wage? Hey, you know, you're going to be paying $500 or $1,000 a month payments on these luxury cars and toys and big houses, you know, $500,000 houses on $6 an hour? I don't think so. And Anthony Sutton's looking ahead now, 1976, and, you know, we're subsidizing our own destruction over here. It's short-sighted on the part of you CEOs that have your degrees from the Harvard Business School, number one. then it doesn't benefit the workers over here. So I don't know why you guys are voting for the Republicrats. You know, I'm just pointing it out to you. I'm not telling you who to vote for. I'm just saying, are you really sure that this is a good program for you? Sutton goes on, he says, there's a major credibility gap among many anti-communists. Some anti-communists have long recognized that we create our own problems. Other anti-communists, including businessmen trading with the Soviet Union and China, refuse to recognize the facts or the problems. This schism among anti-communists is now obvious and is developing as far away as Australia, New Zealand, and Latin America, although it has long been identifiable in the United States. In the United States, one can freely discuss communism and communist revolution up to a point, and only up to the point where one identifies those who subsidize revolution and make possible the long-run survival of socialist ideas and systems. Therefore, because of the nature of the total picture of our technical subsidy to communism, both Russia and China, we now have to go beyond the subverters and the revolutionaries and look at the actions and the motivations of the subsidizers, the multinational corporations, and the governments, those who make possible, those who encourage the actions of the subverters and the revolutionaries. That's going to be the core test of the credibility of the free enterprise arguments in the coming years. When we discuss the subsidy of socialist systems, we separate those who truly want our Western society to survive from those who are playing semantic games with our survival or gambling with our national survival for personal profit. And further, the current cliche about the convergence among political systems for a new world order is suspect. Convergence will mean a static socialist world, and as we subsidize the socialist world, we are at the same time undermining our own world of free enterprise. Convergence is not some halfway point. Convergence is a socialized world with no individual freedom and no free enterprise opportunities. That's where we're headed. Well, now, children, let's take a look at that in the year 2006. Isn't this what the Patriot Act and Homeland Security and looking up your butts all about when you go to get on an airplane? I think old Anthony here kind of hit the nail on the head. Now, remember, he wrote this 30 years ago, and now it's come to pass. And I don't think we're going to go back 30 years. I don't think you're going to elect a new Congress or you're going to elect a new president who's going to take us back to the good old days of the 1970s or the 1960s. This is the brave new world. This is the Walmart world. This is where 10% now of China's exports come through Walmart to the United States. Honest to God, do you think that supporting and subsidizing Red China to the tune of 10% of our imports into the United States is a good policy? I'll just throw it out for your consideration. Obviously, Americans must believe it's a good policy or they wouldn't have adopted it, or they would not have supported the politicians in both parties over the last 30 years who have promoted this free trade and brought us to where we are today. I presume that you Americans are voters and that you're on top of what's going on around you and that you are selecting, carefully choosing your representatives and senators and your presidents and politicians and the leaders to represent your views, and when they go to Washington, that they perform to your standards. I presume that that's what you're doing. So therefore, this must be what you want. So I just wanted to caution you, are you really sure that this is where you want to go? Because there's no turning back now. This brave new world, as Aldous Huxley used to call it, you know, is right on the horizon. In Bible prophecy, it's called the Great Tribulation. It ends up in a monstrous war with a battle in Megiddo, 35 miles northwest of Jerusalem, that's going to kill 200 million people in one battle. 200 million. That's a bunch, kids. Are you really sure that's what you want? Didn't sound like a very good plan to me. Now, the cliche further, the current cliche about convergence among political systems for the New World Order ought to be suspect. Convergence will mean a static socialist world. Are you really sure that you want this static socialist world? Because if you don't, you might want to be thinking about getting off the great ship Titanic before it hits the iceberg. This great ship America, like the great ship Titanic, is steaming straight ahead into uncharted waters. Now, boys and girls, we have been through this fiat paper currency, through this military-industrial complex in civilizations, long before America. And this never worked yet. What makes you think it's going to work this time? You really sure it's going to work? This 1.6% growth that you're talking about here in your national economy. Today, as I speak, on October the 29th, 2006, as I speak, your economy is running 8.4% in the red. You don't have positive growth, kids. You're in recession already. 8.4% is the negative growth of your economy. And that came from Katie Kirk, by the way. Now, Katie doesn't do the arithmetic. She reported, this is Friday night now. I mean, what's the date? Friday night, the 27th of October, Katie Couric, wonderful cheerleader that she is, gotta love her. Makes me feel good every time I watch the CBS Evening News. She reported that the economy was growing 1.6% and said that was anemic. She did not report that the M3 money supply is being expanded at 10%. She did not put 8.4% on the board and 1.6% under it and subtract it. Or excuse me, it'd be 10% less 1.6 to arrive at 8.4. She didn't do that for us. I did. I did it for you. I did the arithmetic for you. So that just in case you thought that the economy was expanding and that the economy was in great condition, I just wanted to tell you, no, it isn't. This thing is a basket case. This thing is sick and anemic. In fact, it is so bad at this juncture of time, there isn't any way to save it. You see, there was a time years ago that we could turn this thing around back in 1976. Anthony Sutton, in his book here called The War on Gold, says, you know, we could turn this thing around before it's too late, but I wonder if we're going to. Well, now the answer is in. The answer is no, we're not going to turn it around. We're going to continue on with more of the same through the 1980s and the 1990s until we get to a point where it is totally irreversible and unsalvageable, and that's where we are in 2006. Now, you know, we're not upside down. I mean, this ship is still floating. It's sinking. We're taking on water, you know, but we're still standing on the railings over here wondering, well, how long will it be before the rescue ships arrive? Children, what makes you think that the Chinese and the Russians are going to rush over here to America and bail our chestnuts out of the fire? What makes you think that? You know, these communists over here have been telling us that they're going to hang us with our own rope, you know, for the last 50 or 75 years. And then on our side over here, we've got these fifth columnists over here. We call them Republicans and Democrats. And we've been voting them into office, and these guys are in the positions of political power. No, I don't think you're going to vote anybody out and vote anybody in and make any major changes over here. Now, there is a guy over here that could probably help us a little bit, but we're not going to have anything to do with the God of Abraham, now, are we? I mean, we're not going to go back to practicing the Ten Commandments, are we? I mean, we're not going to have anybody out here that would be bold enough to stand up and say we need to stop practicing adultery and going down to Flo's place or practicing sodomy now, are we, children? Now, that being the case, then, my guess would be that there's going to be an inevitable conclusion to this experiment. And Anthony Sutton here in the book called The War on Gold says, you know, there's an inevitable conclusion coming from this. And I got to give you a reminder right about now that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, just go to our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools here. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. That's for all those people that don't want to go to school. You do it at home. If you'd like more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Homeschooling program for those that want to learn something. And the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. That's the place to start, you know. Get a little information first. It's 417-273-4967. I always tell my students, you know, freedom isn't for everybody. So keep that in mind. Freedom is not for everybody. And I'm not trying to free all the slaves either. Don't get me wrong. Because if we freed all the slaves, who's going to do the work? Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And then we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, these endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate and recommend the Law Hour and editorial review. And there's a good reason for that. You see, most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, or they're religious, or they're economic, or they're sectarian, or they're racial, or they're ethnic partisans. And they may not support our viewpoint, and we don't necessarily support 100% of the viewpoints that these people hold either. But the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you do here on this program are mine and mine alone. So don't blame that on the advertisers or the sponsors or the management or the staff of this network or local radio station. Don't get mad at them. Get mad at me. Send me the email. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct here at the law school at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing a book. It's 30 years old. A book, not book, but a book here called The War on Gold. And you're sitting here saying, well, what in the hell has this got to do with gold? I haven't heard much about gold yet. Well, stand by. Don't get excited. I want to lay a little foundation for you first. And that foundation is called free trade. And, you know, we Americans over here have been supporting, we have been financing, we have created both sides to World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and now Iraq and Afghanistan. We know we're creating the terrorists, and then we go out and fight them. And then that doesn't sound logical, but it makes all the sense in the world. You have to have somebody to fight. If you're going to base your economy upon a military-industrial complex, military, war, you got to have an enemy. Kids? If you're going to predicate your economy upon medicine and hospitals and doctors and clinics, you got to have disease. So we create the diseases and then we go out and fight them. See? And that creates a $1.6 trillion a year industry called the medical establishment. And so, you know, we needed an economic stimulus, and so we created a military-industrial complex. Well, damn it, now we got to have a war. Let me explain to you how this thing works over here. We have a law enforcement growth industry here in the United States. It's called the law enforcement growth industry. It's a growth industry. Law enforcement is a business. Law enforcement is a great industrial economic stimulus to the economy, just like medicine, just like defense. It's a part and parcel of the American economic system. And here's the way that system works. You see, the chief of police needs to justify his job. He has 168 policemen working in Boise, Idaho. This is back in the 1980s. You probably have a bunch more than that now. But back here in the 1980s, you had Chief Montgomery had 168 policemen. Now he has to justify his expenditures, his budget, his operations to the city council and the mayor. So he goes down to Dick Eardley, the mayor, and he says to the city council, he walks and he testifies, you know, in front of this public meeting. He says, you know, crime in Boise has grown by 5% over the past year, and we have this crime epidemic going on, and we have to solve this crime problem in Boise, Idaho, or Los Angeles, California, or Poughkeepsie, New York, or wherever you live. We have this crime problem. So your chief of police, he goes into the city council and he says, here's what we need to combat crime. Well, everybody's against crime, aren't they? I mean, you don't have very many guys running around out here saying, hey, listen, I'm selling crime today, and we need to buy more crime, and we've got a special on crime, and would you like to buy some crime today? See? No, you can't sell crime that way. We got a more sophisticated methodology for selling crime and law enforcement growth industry. So the chief comes in and he describes how rapes are up by 5% and burglaries are up by so much percent and traffic accidents are up by so many percentage points. He gives all this horrendous bleak picture. Oh, my God, crime is out of control. Crime, 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 he says. Okay, so he proposes a solution to this problem. He says, here's what we need to do to combat this crime epidemic, this great crime problem. We need more laws, and here's my proposals. And so he presents to the city council some more ordinances that the city could enact, which would help his policemen combat this crime epidemic. Then he says, we need more money to fight crime. So I need 5% more money, 5% more policemen, 5% more patrol cars, 5% more laws, so that I can combat this crime increase of 5%. Well, hell, everybody's in favor of fighting crime. That's like everybody's in favor of education. Everybody's in favor of retirement. Everybody's in favor of higher social security benefits for the elderly. Who in the hell is opposed to all these things? And so the city council enacts this 5% more money, and the people of the city are encouraged to pay 5% more taxes so that we can have 5% more money so that we can spend on crime reduction. See, and I was talking about, we're going to reduce crime. We're going to reduce crime. We're going to reduce crime. It's like politicians. We want peace. We want peace. We want peace. See, politicians don't come along saying, we're selling war, war, war. Politicians are selling peace. Policemen are selling crime prevention. They're in a war on crime. Doctors are selling cures. And we just need more research money so we can find more cures and more cures and more cures. I mean, we got cures and crime prevention, and we got peace. That's what everybody wants. But you don't have any peace, and you got more sickness than ever. You got more wars than ever, and you got more crime than ever. Has anybody ever been able to connect the dots? Because here's what happens. The chief gets his 5% more money, so he hires 5 new policemen. He's got 5% more laws for these 5% more policemen to enforce. He's got 5% more patrol cars. So 5 more policemen go out, and they find 5% more crime. don't they? I mean, look, if you got 100 laws and you increase the laws to 105, you got 5% more laws. You got 100 policemen and you hire five more. You got 105 policemen. Five more policemen go out and find 5% more crime, don't they? I mean, I can remember a day, boys and girls, when it wasn't against the law to drive your automobile without a seatbelt on. Today, it's a crime. The policeman sees you driving down the road without a seatbelt. He rushes out. He gives you a ticket. Okay, now, you know, if you want to make, not wearing a seatbelt a crime, I guess you could. Hell, you can make blonde hair and blue eyes a crime if you want to. I don't see any great purpose in it, but, you know, if you think that people running around on the streets of America with blue eyes is a criminal activity, my God, let's get busy. Call your representatives and senators today. Let's stamp out blue eyes and blonde hair. Hell, we could probably put a death penalty on blonde hair and blue eyes if you put your minds to it. It's like having a war on drugs, you know, or a war on crime. Okay, well, now here's what happens. The following year, because you got 5% more laws, 5% more money, 5% more policemen, you now have 5% more arrests, don't you? Well, unless those policemen are smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee all the time, they're out on the streets passing out tickets, or they're out on the streets enforcing more building codes, or they're out on the streets doing something over here, finding 5% more criminals. So next year, the chief of police comes and says, oh, my God, crime increased 5%. Well, of course it went up 5%. That's what we're buying. We're buying crime. That's the objective. Why should you people be surprised that crime has increased 5%? That's what you're buying. That's what you bought. 5% more policemen are going to find 5% more people breaking 5% more laws, and it's going to increase crime by 5%. So the chief comes in and says, hey, crime's up 5%. Oh, my God, we've got to have more money. So we come to the taxpayers, got to increase your taxes by 5% so that we can fight 5% more crime by hiring 5% more policemen, so that we can have 5% more laws and 5% more money and 5% more patrol cars so that we can find 5% more criminals. And sure enough, following year, crime goes up another 5%. Okay, that's why you have more and more sickness. You keep buying more and more sickness. If you want sickness, you're on the right track. You're on the right track. Just keep after it. You want more war? You're on the right track. You can have more war, and you can have more fiat currency. You can have more taxes. Just keep it up. Now, what I pointed out to you, are you really sure that's what you want? Are you really sure that's what you want to buy? Because that's what you're buying, whether you know it or not. And I'm not really sure that that's a good program. I didn't want to buy any more crime, so I quit buying into the crime program. I didn't want to buy any more sickness and disease, so I quit doing that. I didn't want to buy into any more war, so I quit that. I didn't want to buy into any more income tax, so I dropped out of that program, too. I don't think the income tax program has half as much to offer as the tithing program. My government wants one-third of everything I create and produce in income tax and Social Security, and God said all he wanted was 10%. And I thought, well, let's see. One-third is 33%, and a tithe is 10%, so I put 33 up here. Katie doesn't do this, but I do. You put 33 on your paper, boys and girls, and then put 10 under it and draw a line under the 10. Put a minus sign by that 10, and that's 23. You can increase your standard of living by 23% by dropping out of Social Security and income tax. Did you know that? Yeah, that's a statistical mathematical fact, and I'm just a crummy plumber. I'm not an economist, no, but I'm a plumber that ain't brain dead, and then I can still subtract 10 from 33. The tithing program is 10%. The income tax and Social Security program is 33%. That leaves you with 23. Now, you could have 23 more dollars out of every $100 bill to spend on yourself by dropping out of Social Security and income tax. So I know it's a wild new concept. Most of you can't handle it. So let's go on to the next topic. Finally, these problems cannot be considered in a vacuum. On the one hand, we have subsidized the economic and military power of the Soviet Union. We donate viability to a static, failure-prone economic system. We provide the rationale and the motivation for revolution and subversion. However, there is another facet to this problem. Rampant, uncontrollable inflation resulting from an ostensible attempt to achieve full employment. Our own quasi-socialist planning, which more obviously reveals the defects of socialism. We're on the edge of a financial precipice, which will bring down the financial structure of the Western world. Or to change the metaphor, our big balloon of debt and fiat money is poised to come crashing down upon our heads. And when it does, notice the word when, not if, but when it collapses, we can expect social and economic chaos. This chaos will make our Western society an easy victim for Marxists, the revolutionaries, the subversives, and all of their fellow travelers. So in considering our future survival, two interrelated elements can be identified. First, the technical and financial subsidy of the Soviet Union, which provides an unworkable and hostile system with the illusion of success, and so encourages the revolutionaries and the subversives. And second, it's an ongoing crisis of a collapsing world financial system, which ultimately will create chaos, an essential prerequisite for successful revolution and the overthrow of capitalist society. I want you to remember now that this book is written in 1976. Well, hell, isn't that where we're at today in 2006? This guy's about 30 years ahead of his time. He says, hey, listen, we're headed here for a fiat paper currency, which is ultimately going to collapse. And he says, when, not if. Well, we all thought that it was coming in 79, 80, 81. And Paul Volcker came on the scene, shut off the money spigot, sent us into a recession, which cost Jimmy Carter the election in 1980. We put Ronald Reagan in so that Ronald Reagan could get all of the benefits of the Volcker program. Said, okay, we're going to shut this off. We could do the same thing today. We could opt for recession and deflation, or we can opt for inflation, hyperinflation, if we so desire. And we have opted, that is Ben Bernanke, we call him Helicopter Ben around here, has opted now for hyperinflation, which will be followed by deflation. So hyperinflation gives you the best of both worlds. You can have both hyperinflation and then deflation, or you can opt for deflation coming out of the chute, and you can bypass hyperinflation. My vote is let's take the Green Death Bill and get beyond hyperinflation and get this this excess purged out of the economy and go back to gold. But nobody wants to do that because gold is a barbaric relic. Well, okay, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success, children. And so I'm going to stock up a little of that barbaric relic while the rest of you stock up on more $100 bills. And then let's measure this 10 years when we come back to our class reunion and see who made out the best. You know, I'm not suggesting that you change anything. I'm just pointing out to you that it hasn't worked in the past. And I thought I'd ask you, what in the hell makes you think it's going to work out any better in the future? Doesn't look like to me that past failures is any indicator of future success and prosperity. He goes on to say, if we assume that businessmen wish to live in a free enterprise system and that they cherish their country and their enterprise traditions, then two basic policies have to be adopted. These are fundamentally new policies. The trend over the past 50 years, and I could add now, the past 75 years, has brought us to the brink of disaster. Then new policies are wholly opposed to and inconsistent with this trend. They're wholly opposed to the Kissinger-Rockefeller approach. I'd like to put my vote in there. I'm totally opposed to the Kissinger-Rockefeller approach. I don't like that either. Briefly, it is recommended that we must undertake these policies. First, to neutralize the widespread illusion that socialist societies have any technical and economic viability, that socialism can in any way be successful without our help. This is an educational task, and it cannot be done by legislation or by government decree. The task has to be undertaken by private organizations and private individuals. Now, that's where we come in. This is called the Law Hour and Editorial Review, an educational program in the public interest. Two, to adopt a world financial system based on the ultimate discipline of gold, preferably a pure gold standard, but any international system based on gold would restore confidence in the currency. This is a political task. I'm going to underline confidence in the currency, and I'm going to say, no, I don't want any currency at all. I just want gold coin. Now, if industry adopts and implements these policies reasonably soon, it is still possible for free enterprise to survive and prosper. If industry does not adopt these policies, then a bleak future faces the Western world, and we shall see either a world communist state or, more probably, a world community of communist states within several decades, probably by the year 2000, perhaps sooner, but in any case, not much later. So I'm going to underline not much later. This is 6 years later than 2000. I think Anthony isn't too far off the mark. So there's still a little time, but not too much time. Well, boys and girls, I think that that time frame has already expired. I'm a little more pessimistic. I don't think that you have any more time left, and I don't think that anybody is going to adopt a gold standard. And I don't think Walmart or the average Joe Sixpack out here is going to stop shopping at Walmart and importing all of these communist Chinese goods and services made with slave Chinese labor. So I think we're going to have more of the same for the foreseeable future, which inevitably will lead to the collapse of the Western economies, which is going to be triggered by the collapse of the United States dollar. Because, see, all the countries in the world, kids, are using the dollar as a reserve currency. That's China and Japan and the English and the British and the French and everybody in the world, the Indonesians and so on. Everybody's using these dollars. Now, the world is full of these dollars. Now, here's your kicker. If all of the people who hold dollars went down to the local Walmart store and converted their dollars into goods, and we all did this equally so that we all share equally, we could all get 2 cents on the dollar. So let's suppose you got $1,000, and you can get 2 cents on the dollar. You follow that? No. So you can get about $20 worth of goods off the shelves, and the other $990, you lose. How does that make you feel? All right. You could take the $1,000 down today and convert it into $1,000 worth of goods. But if you do that, you selfish pig, then somebody else will not be able to get the full 2 cents. All right, now I'm one of those selfish pigs. And I went down and I got rid of my dollar. So I'm not very dollar heavy. I got out of dollars a long time ago. And I think that that's what you see going on around the world right now. You see countries around the world shifting out of dollar denominated assets and getting into euros or Swiss francs or gold or silver or wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. And I want to point out, kids, that the wheat harvest this year worldwide is down 40%. Kids, there's going to be higher prices for wheat next year, and that means wheat thins and Oreo cookies, which has nothing to do with the economy, has nothing to do with paper money or gold. It has to do with the weather. And I'd like to point out to you that in the Great Depression of the 1930s, we not only had an economic collapse, but we also had drought in America. Do you remember that? For some reason, God stuck it to us double, screwed up the economy and screwed up the weather. And I just sit here on the sidelines in the bleachers asking the question, geez, I suppose maybe that's coming again. History repeating itself. So I thought I'd throw that out for your consideration, that maybe, just maybe, you might want to think about getting rid of dollars and converting that into wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, or into gold and silver and a few other commodities over there. It might be better for you than paper. Now, years ago when I was a kid, they told us that if we continue on this insane economic course that we're on, the dollar will be destroyed. Well, from 1930, when a dollar was worth 100 cents, until today in 2006, the dollar is now down 97%. So your dollar today buys 3 cents of what it would in 1930. I would say that when your money depreciates by 97%, you have witnessed the total destruction of your money. We're not talking about saving the American dollar. We're only talking about saving the last 3 cents. That's all you're going to do, kids, is save the last 3 cents. So if you want to do that, get after it. If you don't, why, you know, do something else. Hey, I'm about out of time again. We're going to have to leave it right about here. And let me remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, and editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.